It's the Troopany Show with your host, James Troopany.
Hello, welcome to the Troopany Show. My name is James Troopany. This is my show. And we are back with our 101st episode to discuss the goings on at Impact Wrestling. Now, I have a guest today from New York City, New York. She is the lead contributor for ShouldersUp.net, Miss Chelsea Spollen. How are you, Mom?
I'm doing okay. I can't believe we're about to talk about an Impact pay-per-view.
No, this is true. As you may have noticed, that me and Marcus have kind of given up on Impact Wrestling for a while, whilst we were left alone with our thoughts after Bound for Glory, which was god-awful. But there have been things afoot in the last eight or so months that have changed the way that Impact Wrestling works, most notably the retirement of the last management team and the consolidation of Scott D'Amore and Don Callis and Sonjay Dutt in the promotional driving seat, which has improved the show no end. It is now actually watchable. Probably a little too promo-heavy for my taste, but they've got a bunch of new characters they have to get over, so that's what they had to do. Chelsea, going into the show, had you watched any of the TV, and what did you think was happening with the company? Did you think it was positive?
So I watched the bits that I saw on Twitter, which is mostly... I mean, I watched the stuff that Jimmy Jacobs posted on his Twitter after he did a drive-by over there. And I watched... I watched Sami Callihan hit Eddie Edwards in the face. I wasn't sure really what to think, to be honest with you. I decided to watch Redemption in the first place because I had seen people who watch Impact saying the show's gotten better, this pay-per-view looks like it might be interesting, that they were doing the collaborative relationship with Lucha Underground, and I thought, well, okay, you know, pretty much everybody who's on Lucha Underground is amazing. You know, I couldn't really think of any reason not to give it a chance, so... Yeah, I don't know. It surprised me.
Yeah, I mean, it has been interesting watching them, like, change direction very publicly, because everything Impact do is very, very public. I mean, the only major clanger that I've seen them do lately was the Sami Callihan stuff, you know, and how they presented that. I was not a fan of that. I've been very public about that reaction to what they did. I didn't like it. I know you weren't a big fan of it either, and it partly because neither of us are fans of Sami Callihan, that doesn't help the situation. But equally, it did put eyes on the products, and they used that very well. And they have a crew that are very tight-knit. The trouble is, I think, with Impact is no one knows who's going to stay that long. I mean, Braxton Sutter's already left since we did this pay-per-view. Like, that happened last Sutter and Sunday, and he already left yesterday. So every time we get to a TV taping, you're not sure who's going to be on there. It's like WCW in the early 90s. It's the Wild West. Anything can happen. And there is an advantage to that. So one of the reasons why Nitro was so successful in the 90s was because you didn't know who was going to appear on the show.
Yeah, it's true.
Right then. So we'll go to the first match on this particular show, which was it was a dark match. Well, it wasn't really a dark match. It was a kind of classic Lucha Underground match. Drago and Aerostar had a match, the kind of match they've been having on Lucha Underground for the last 4 or 5 years. It was perfectly serviceable what it was and showcased two talents that Impact could probably get a lot more out of. What did you think of this, Chelsea?
I thought this was great. excuse me. I usually really like Aerostar because half the stuff that dude does doesn't look like it's real. Like, springboard flips off the rope where he just kind of launches himself off his knees and you don't know where the inertia came from. Like, that dude is crazy. Drago is, I would say, less like a favorite of mine, but he's also really good. I mean, you can tell he knows what he's doing, and there's a reason he's been successful in that character. You know, he can work really well with a whole bunch of different wrestling styles. So, I thought this match was a lot of fun. And, I mean, Aerostar is one of those guys I think of as, like, being such a star everywhere that, like, if Impact lets him keep doing his thing, even if they don't give him, like, a really solid storyline or a reason, he'll be a star for them because, I mean, he's a star everywhere else.
Yeah.
You know, I thought this was a good way to start the show because the crowd seemed like they were really excited about it. They seemed like they were enjoying it.
I think this is one of those things, if you'd done this 4 years ago, no one would have known who Drago and Aerostar were. Drago and Aerostar were, I should say, and this was a good example of how to use that relationship with Lucha Underground to the heights of the most, the biggest advantage you could, to recognizable guys who have great matches with one another and have always had great matches with one another. It gets your partner's program over, which is the point of them being on the show in the first place, but it gives a snappy opener. And usually in this position a year ago, you'd have had a six-way X Division match that made no sense and didn't really do anything for anyone. So this is a great improvement on that.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, like, I think some of the issues I had with the previous iterations of TNA that I have watched is that sometimes they're going for something that is too complicated, and the end result of what it is that they're aiming for doesn't hold together because they haven't done a good enough job explaining whatever it is to the audience, or they've explained it too much and then it's not interesting to watch. And this was just like, you know, a good wrestling match. Like, it was in its conception pretty simple. It was, those two guys are gonna have a wrestling match, and when you get two guys who are really good at wrestling, that shit works 100% of the time.
Yeah, this does not have to be rocket science. And for a long time, no. Impact Wrestling tried to do rocket science when none of them had the brains to do it, to be honest with you. And
I've noticed that they're not changing people's names anymore either, which I like.
Yeah. They're making things more linear. I noticed that as well. I think it's part of kind of their drive to kind of like on the other end. Of like when people go, they're letting people keep their names. I think they're trying to like build on things that are already there, because why reinvent the wheel if you don't have to? If you've got a specific character idea that you want to build, then fine, but use a lesser name and try and build them up. Like Ali's a good example. You could have introduced her as Cherry Bomb. They didn't, which I think was a missed opportunity, but they introduced her as Ali and did this slow build over 2 years until she's the biggest star in the company, really.
Yeah. Or, like, there was no reason that Chelsea Green needed to be Laurel Van Ness, you know?
Yeah.
If they had let her be herself, maybe she wouldn't have outgrown their platform so fast.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the risky run, isn't it? You know, it's the payoff is often, the payoff within the company isn't necessarily good for the company. It's sometimes good for the particular wrestler. And now Chelsea Green is off making more money on the indies than she ever would do in Impact, and probably waiting for that call up to NXT anytime soon, I guess.
Yeah.
Speaking of rocket scientists, we actually have a rocket scientist on staff at the Troopany show. Cy Heath actually has a degree in astrophysics.
Are you serious?
He has a master's degree from Manchester University in astrophysics, yes.
That's random. That's pretty cool.
It is. It's amazing. That's how he ended up in Manchester. Anyway, we move on to the second match of the evening. Eli Drake and Scott Steiner defeated Latin American Exchange in 8 minutes of a match that was never going to go longer than 8 minutes, because Scott Steiner these days can only move for 8 minutes, and then he has to have a good sit down. Honest to God, if you'd have told me that I would have enjoyed a match with Scott Steiner in 2018, I'd have said you were crazy. But Scott actually found some stops to pull out and lit it all up like it was 1994 all over again. Top right Frankensteiner from a guy who's over 50. It was insane. This match was far better than it should have been, but I'm glad they kept it short. New champions, it continues the story with Eli Drake and actually gives LAX something to do, because now they have to fight their way back to the championship, which is good, because that means more classic matches from LAX. And also, I like the fact there was no Conan, because that tends to detract from the situation. What do you think of this, Chelsea?
I am likewise shocked that this was pretty good. I have not been that impressed with previous attempts that I've watched by Impact to bring back classic wrestling stars and sort of do their own thing with them. And I think this worked because they let Scott Steiner just kind of be Scott Steiner. Like, they didn't make too big an issue out of it. They were just like, this is Scott Steiner, and he's there. And I was impressed. I was shocked he did that top rope Rana. I was really, really shocked. The LAX, they strike me as kind of like the Usos of TNA, which is to say that they're really good tag team wrestlers, but they're often booked so badly that nobody knows how good they are.
Yes. Their run with OVE was spoilt by too many hardcore style matches that didn't really need to be there because they're good enough wrestlers to get over without it.
Yeah, I mean, and you can tell like all their hot tag spots that they have worked out together are really good. Their moves that they do, I don't know what you call them, but like combo moves or something with the two of them are really good. I feel like if you adjusted how you present them, it would be really easy for them to get over as stars. Because, I mean, for the longest time in WWE, the Usos were just, like, window dressing for whatever kind of pre-show match they wanted to have, you know? And now they're, like, they are the tag division on SmackDown. I feel like LAX has a higher ceiling than we've seen from them so far. I kind of don't know what to think of Eli Drake being a tag team wrestler, because he's definitely not bad at it, but I also don't know if it's, like, his thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a similar thing they did with Cowboy James Storm when they had to get him out of the singles division because he was drawing too much heat away from the people who were supposed to be in the singles division, so they randomly stuck him with Gunnar. And it worked. It was alright. It did what it said on the tin, and it had some funny moments and stuff. And the same thing they did with Bobby Roode and Austin Aries, you know, as dirty heels. It was the same kind of deal. We've got Eli Drake. We've got to tell a story to get him back to the World Championship, but we can't have him at the top end of the singles at the moment because we need to do this story first. And I think it works. I think it's like, you know, you also want a sense of awkwardness about it, because if he turns out to be a really good tag team wrestler, it doesn't tell the story of him being a singles specialist either, does it?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know, I look at that guy and I don't know what the end game is for him. Not end game, that sounds wrong, but I never know where that guy is going. I never look at him and think, oh, I can definitively see this being a direction he ends up going in. And that could just be because TNA has been so directionless overall for such a long time. But I also, I don't know, to me, he's a little too much in some ways, like his own character, but maybe people don't like that character, while also being a little too generic.
Yeah, this is Ben Spindler's knock on him. He's just a 2006 NXT guy. Lower level development guy in WWE, and he's not really changed that much since. And I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. So was EC3, you know.
I mean, that's true. I think EC3 has a level of charisma that kind of worked in his favor. You know, like that guy's not somebody that I get really excited about, but a lot of people on my timeline love that guy.
Yeah, I mean, I really do. I think he's absolutely awesome. I mean, no one cuts a promo like him in wrestling at the moment. He can work. He's not a slouch in the ring. He gives his all every time he does, and I've seen him wrestle all sorts of different opponents and have different kinds of matches. I think he's kind of like, it's kind of like the position Steve Austin is when he wins King of the Ring. He's a mechanic and he can talk. Now, where do you go with that? What's the options? And you need somebody who's creative enough in the booking to give him a blank canvas to let him go and do things. I think that's the key for him. And this, I see where you're coming from. This kind of pens him into a storyline, but we'll see how far he can take it himself, because it'll be him that's pushing it. Not that Scott Steiner can't push it, but Scott's not going to be there to do TV every week, and Eli is.
Right, and also Scott Steiner, if he did that, the top rope Rana on TV every single week, it wouldn't be the impactful moment that it was.
Yeah, exactly.
No pun intended.
Yeah, that's it. That's where we are, where we're at, really. Okay, next match was a six-way match between Brian Cage, who won, versus Desmond Xavier, DJZ, El Hijo del Fantasma, Taiji Ishimori, and Trevor Lee. 12 minutes and 58 seconds, which was, it was really a match to get Brian Cage over. And it did that, and it was entertaining. And it's nice to see DJZ back, who's apparently held together with Alastair Past and Hope at the moment, so hopefully he gets better soon. Despite nearly having a year off, he's got other injuries he's picked up, as I found out on the Art of Wrestling this week. Taiji Ishimori quit Noah a couple of weeks ago. He's now full-time with Impact Wrestling, or as full-time as you can be, with a company that only does shows every 2 weeks. So he's working indies in Japan and indies in the US in between times. There's basically a lot of politics in this match, which was a fairly good match, but it's the kind of thing that used to go on at the opening of Impact pay-per-views, And it's all right. It's not my particular cup of tea because there's just too much going on. What did you think, Chelsea?
I think that all the guys who are in this match are really, really good. I don't necessarily know that you get the opportunity to properly appreciate how good each of them are when they're presented like this. I feel like there was so much going on that unless it was a guy I was more familiar with, like I'm more familiar with Taiji Ishimori or I'm more familiar with Brian Cage, I know how good those guys are, I know the stuff they have in their repertoires. I don't necessarily know that it was a place to like build new stars or really get somebody over.
Yeah, yeah, it just kind of like got the guys on the show, really. And it, I mean, the reason why it's there is Brian Cage showing his adaptability. I can hang with DJZ, I can do all this aerial stuff as well. I'm not just a power grunt and groan wrestler, which they need to kind of like make sure he's not like solely defined as one thing, because it's clearly they have big plans for him. And I completely agree with them. You want big plans for Brian Cage. He's a game day player. He's going to be something well worth watching in the long run. But again, this doesn't achieve an awful lot for the other five guys who've also got to go to work on Thursday night.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, like, I watched Desmond Xavier at the beginning of this match and was like, oh, wow, that guy's really good. I forgot. And then for most of the rest of this match, you don't really get to see how good he is. I was like, oh, I would rather just have Brian Cage have a singles match with any of those guys or have any of those guys have a singles match, you know? I mean, like, Taiji Ishimori is someone where every time I see him on Impact, he's in a tag match. And I think, can't we just have that guy in a singles match? He's really, really good. Because I know that he can do stuff that you don't... I mean, he's not even scratching the surface for most of these Impact tapings based on other stuff I've seen him do elsewhere. He can do some crazy things.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Ishimori is a fantastic wrestler, but so is everyone else in this card. And it is like, well, on this particular match. But it shows strength in depth of what they've got, you know. They could do an awful lot more with it. They didn't choose to here. And obviously they've got to have breathers because there's some big emotional moments on this particular night. But,
yeah. You
know, for what it was, I think it really works as a match that does that. But there's not an awful lot there to give it more for everybody else.
Right. I just wish it had been a little bit more, I guess. Maybe I'm being too picky. I mean, all those guys are really, really talented, and that's nice to see. And also, is it me, or could you tell that morale wasn't as low as it has been at previous tapings?
Yeah, there was a spring in the step of everybody there, I think. There were people who were trying to prove themselves. Redemption was obviously, as Matthews says at the beginning of the show, you know, he explains that, you know, this is a bunch of people trying to redeem their reputation, and that's what the show's about, which is a little too inside of me, but equally, it's better than going out and saying, we're going to go back to the glory days of this company 10 years ago when everybody used to watch it, and it's been shit for the last 6 months since the last time we came out and did the same. And it is just like, so you just say you're insulting the fans by telling them that the show they've been watching has been crap, so what's the point in watching then? So doing it more subtly was sensible, and they did a good job with it. They also, I would say I had presentation issues because it was Josh Matthews and Don Callis. What did you think of them two? Before we move on, I should ask really.
So Josh Matthews always annoys me. It's infrequent that I have a moment where I really like his commentary. Usually most of what he has to say just feels superfluous to me. Don Callis was okay. I think he does better in New Japan, but in New Japan he's really more like, he's more subdued, I guess, a lot of the time. I don't know, like it wasn't a train wreck, but it also wasn't my personal taste.
No, it was professionally succinct.
It was kind of mediocre on purpose, was how I felt.
Yeah, I think they didn't want to particularly tear trees up and stuff and try really hard because they were trying to make sure they got it right, which is noble in itself, I guess. But equally, it is just like two heel commentators for 3 hours is an awful lot of heel commentator.
Yeah, and I don't know, the only break we got in their narration was when Tessa Blanchard sat down, and then she was also a heel commentator, and frankly, I don't really think commentary is her first skill. She was so annoying to listen to.
Yeah.
She was supposed to be, but not in a good way. I don't know. They need to get a woman to do commentary. Like, I've thought that for such a long time.
Yeah, it'd be
Am
different.
Am I wrong that would
no,
be really,
no,
really
it would
good?
No, it'd be really, really cool, because it would be different. No mainstream company's done it, so do that. If you want to be, if you don't want to be different, like you used to be different with six-sided rings and stuff that was revolutionary different, do subtle things like a different, like a female announcer. That would be a good idea, you know?
Yeah. You know, they should get somebody in there who's, like, really experienced, who knows a lot of the wrestlers. Like, I don't know, like, someone who can talk. Get, like, Lufisto in there. She'd be hilarious.
Yeah, there's loads of them that would work really, really well. So, yes, please, and get rid of Josh Matthews.
Yes.
That will solve so many problems. Next, we move on to a singles match. Taya Valkyrie defeated Kira Hogan in 8 minutes in kind of a standard stock newbie girl against veteran kind of match with the aforementioned Tessa Blanchard on commentary, which, you know, it showcased Taya Valkyrie really, really well. Kira Hogan has the best hair I've seen in a long time.
Oh my god, it is so great.
It is beautiful. And she can wrestle a lick, and she did okay with this, but it wasn't about her. It was about Taya Valkyrie, and it was about Tessa Blanchard, and those things were done in a perfectly fine manner, and Taya Valkyrie looks like a powerhouse, and is obviously designed for great things in the same way Brian Cage was. You can tell there's a lot more long-term narrative going on with the booking. I know Brian Cage has got big things in the future. I know Taya Valkyrie has got big things in the future. Which isn't what you used to see in Impact Wrestling at all.
Yeah. I mean, and I, like, so I should say, I love Kira Hogan. She is someone who is definitely not 100% on the level of, like, a main event performer yet, but also she worked so hard. You can tell, like, if you watched any of the stuff she did, like, a year ago, and you see the stuff she does now, she constantly improves. She has a great look. The camera loves her. I met her at a Shine show. She's a total sweetheart. Like, I'm rooting for her to be successful. I cross my fingers when I see her, because I feel like WWE is something that could really work out for her, because she looks like a natural TV star to me. Taya Valkyrie is, like, awesome every time I've ever seen her. She did look super powerful in this match. She's got a little bit of that, like, sleazy hot pinup girl thing, which she does on purpose, and it works really well for her. It doesn't feel exploitative. It feels like she's driving the bus on all of that.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that. I don't know what a match between her and Tessa Blanchard is gonna look like, but I guess we'll see. I liked this. I wished that there had been more stuff from the women on this show, because there's only two women's matches on this show. But, I mean, that's me. I always want there to be more women's wrestling.
Yeah, well, I mean, two is better than the one standard knockouts match we used to get.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And the matches on this show were both very different, so that's good, too.
Yeah. All right, then next we move on to the X Division title match, which was Matt Sydal defeating Petey Williams in 11 minutes and 58 seconds. This was a strong and solid match. It was a guest performance by Scott Steiner before, to reignite the Petey and Scott Scott tag team of a few years ago. Petey's awesome. I love watching him. The inventor of the Canadian Destroyer. He's ace. And yeah, this was a perfectly good match. Maybe not as classic as X Division matches as it was in the past. And Sydal is a good champion. I think there's something missing, though, and I'm not quite sure what it is. But, you know, Pete is 10 years older than when he first started in the X Division, and Sydal has some damage as well, so it's not going to be what you'd expect it to be from a few years ago.
Wait, so he really did create the Canadian Destroyer?
Yep, he dreamt it up in a high school history class.
Are you serious? That move is... I mean, like, John Cena does that move. Holy cow.
Yeah, he invented the Canadian Destroyer. And
that's really cool.
He used to practice it in wrestling. He was going to wrestling school when he was like 17 years old, and he practiced it there. And then he started doing it on indie shows and eventually started doing it in Impact, and that's where it became famous.
That's really, really cool. I did not know that. I don't know how I didn't realize that, because they were talking about how it was something he was known for. I just figured it was a move he was known for.
No, he actually invented it. That's awesome. Yeah, he did, like I said, he was sat in class, in history class one day, and was like, what if I did... There you go.
That's really cool.
Yeah. But yeah, perfectly good, serviceable match. What did you think of the match?
My one knock on this match, even though I thought it was good, is that I felt like commentary was talking so much about the moves in this match that it was hard to focus on the wrestling. Because, I mean, if it's just a contest of who can do their big fancy finisher first, I don't know, matches like that, there's kind of no story to them, even if there is story to them, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know that whatever story was being told there was something I picked up on, because commentary kept talking about Matt Sydal being able to do a shooting star press, and blah 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 blah, like, they just kept going on and on about it. That's just unnecessary, it doesn't help those moves, it doesn't make them cooler and more interesting, but I thought the match was fun. I really like Matt Sydal a lot. He's really charismatic. I've seen him in person a couple of times. You can tell that guy knows what he's doing whenever he's in front of a TV camera. Like, he rolls with it, all of it. Like, none of it is a struggle for him at all. And PD seems to be similarly experienced. I mean, it sounds like he's been doing this a really long time. He's someone I'm less familiar with because I haven't watched as much Impact. But I thought he was good here. I thought they both looked like TV stars, which is really what you want.
Yeah, that's it. I think it was solid. Like, a lot of the stuff on this show, it was just well done.
Yeah.
Not spectacular in a New Japan way. Not overly gloriously produced. I say overly is not fair. Gloriously produced like in a WWE way. It was a perfectly satisfactory wrestling match that told the story that needed to be told.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there are entire independent wrestling shows that sell out lots of venues that work that way, and people go and they have a really good time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, and especially when you have a reputation for fouling things up, it's probably the best thing to do.
Yeah. Not try not to overshoot. Yeah. I think that's a good point.
Yeah. Speaking of overshooting, yeah, the next match was a Hardcore Rules 6-10 tag team match. Featuring OVE, Dave Christ, Jake Christ, and Sammy. And they defeated Eddie Edwards, Moose, and Tommy Dreamer in 13 minutes. It was alright. It did what it said on the tin. I'm kind of sick of matches like this because I watched them in ECW 20 years ago, and they were fine in ECW 20 years ago, but I don't see why they should be on mainstream wrestling shows. Tommy Dreamer is an incredible man to do the things he does at that age and still keep coming back to the more, and probably shouldn't. I like Eddie Edwards. That's all I can really say about this match. It was okay. It was 13 minutes. About the right length. Had a predictable ending. And it furthers this story, which means I have to suffer it for longer. So there you go. That's my take on it. What do you think of this, Chelsea?
I'll be honest. I originally skipped this entirely before I knew we were doing this podcast. Because I saw that Sammy Callahan and Tommy Dreamer were both in it. And I was like, well, there's nothing for me there. I just don't need to watch it. That is still kind of how I feel.
Yeah.
I can take my fair share of garbage wrestling, but I prefer the garbage wrestling to be a little more artful, you know?
Yeah.
I am pretty picky about that stuff because super violent wrestling is just kind of not my thing. I will say that this match did a good job of furthering the narrative that Sammy Callahan is the biggest douchebag in the universe. That's what they want him to be right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
So that's what they did. I think Eddie Edwards is great. I have seen that guy in person, and he's very charismatic. Again, someone that I look at and I think natural TV star. He was entertaining. Tommy Dreamer doing his thing. I don't know. I just don't have that much to say about this match because it's just not my taste, and I don't really think it's in good taste anyway.
Yeah, I mean, no, I agree with you because it is like we watch the FMW stuff all the time because for the beginner's guide to Japanese wrestling, mm-hmm. How many of them FMW mm-hmm. shows we watched that we thoroughly enjoyed, despite them being far more violent than this, but it was well done.
It's really good emotional storytelling, for
yeah.
sure.
And this is not really good emotional storytelling. This is
right.
This is taking advantage of an opportunity, which I have no problem with. That's what you're supposed to do if you book it right. The issue I have with this is, I guess, consistency. In the sense, we're supposed to believe Sammy Callahan is this cult-like person who's actually truly evil and who's only doing it for money and he's only doing it for command of Impact Wrestling. And to be fair to him, he lives that character online, which is where a lot of his criticisms come from. And I think it's justified criticism as well. And we're supposed to believe that. Then last week, Braxton Sutter and Ali, who are supposed to be a bickering former boyfriend and girlfriend on Impact Television, were on the Steve Austin podcast together explaining how they're married and, you know, they have such a great time. And to be honest with you, there is as many people worldwide who listen to the Steve Austin podcast as watch an episode of Impact in the US. So, you know, to me, it is just like, I completely agree with where you're trying to come from to use this kind of like, go back to the old days, tell the story properly, be really into people's heads. But A, Sami Callihan isn't good enough to do that. He's not a good enough wrestler. He certainly isn't a good enough psychologist to do that. And secondly, we live in a different time now. You know, wrestling's supposed to be a release. It's supposed to be a bit more fun. And quite frankly, you know, stalking wrestlers' wives, permanently injuring them, that stuff doesn't really click with the audience much anymore. There has been an increase in viewership for Impact Wrestling, which is the reason why Sami Callihan is calling himself the draw, but quite honestly, I think it's just because they aren't f***ed up. And when they don't f*** up, they get a good audience. And that's the reason why they're growing an audience instead of turning people away with stupid mistakes, which they made far too often. You know, they're making their mistakes mostly behind closed doors. I think the Sami Callihan stuff was a mistake, you know, and there was a big conversation between David Starr and Sami Callihan during WrestleCon or WrestleMania week in their run-up to their match at WrestleCon about Sami Callihan's behaviour and stuff, and that was a really interesting read, and it was interesting watching him wrestle David Starr in a six-man match because they were both very professional with one another, but there was certainly a level of uncomfortableness watching that match when you'd read that Twitter conversation. But again, they could be working as... Interestingly, neither of us have spoken about Moose in this match, which pretty much sums up Moose.
I feel badly. I like that guy as a person. I think he's a good guy. And I've seen singles matches of his where I thought he was interesting, but he did not really stand out in this match, and I think at one point in this match he did a front flip over the rope onto a ladder.
Yeah.
I just don't really understand why they used him for this.
No.
It didn't really feel like it did anything for him.
No, and it wasn't... It's not his kind of match. I mean, he pulled off some incredible spots. My problem with Moose is he's too derivative, to be honest with you. He wrestles like Kazuchika Okada. Exactly the same, down to borrowing the same moves. His finisher is a rainmaker with a twist in it, which makes it look worse and less impactful. But, you know, the top rope drop kick, all the stuff, he essentially wrestles like Kazuchika Okada. And there's nothing wrong with paying homage to it, but it's too close to the original at a time when the original is still there. And if I'm going to pick between Kazuchika Okada and a Moose, it's going to be Kazuchika Okada every time.
Well, and also, I mean, you and I have said many times before that people who don't understand how good Okada really is miss the fact that it's not his moveset that distinguishes him. It's how he puts that shit together. He's a master at maximizing whatever it is his opponent gives him to make it look as cool as possible. And Moose is perfectly fine. I just don't think he's on that level because, like, almost nobody is.
No, you know, Kazuchika Okada pulls the same trick Harley Race did, Minami Toyota did, Ric Flair did, Steve Austin, The Rock, all the big names in wrestling history you can think of, Bruno Sammartino, we talked about him last week, did the same thing. Get the best out of your opponent that's put in front of you and make it work. And that's what he does better than anyone else on the planet right now.
Yeah.
You know, he has all those signature moves, but they're only part of the story. And we talk about the Rainmaker a lot because it's the best storytelling device in wrestling. How many Rainmakers...
It's been really well built and protected and used effectively.
Yeah, how many Rainmakers will it take to get rid of Kenny Omega? That's the storyline. There's the last 7 minutes of the match written. We know what it is. They don't have to even tell us, and that's what's going to happen. And that's where Moose needs to work on things. He can sell. I've seen him sell pretty well. And he can. His psychology's not bad, but it's a bunch of moves. It's not a wrestling match yet.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to the Impact Knockouts title match, which featured Ali defeating Soo Young with Braxton Sutter in 7 minutes and 17 seconds, was really, really good. I enjoyed this a lot. I like Soo Young as a wrestler. I love Ali as a wrestler. And she is so over. It's ridiculous. And this was just really, really good wrestling. Put together really, really well. And the semi-main event of the pay-per-view, which is really good news for Impact Wrestling as far as their women's division is concerned. I think Ali was talking on the Steve Austin podcast when she was on it. She was saying, like, how the women's division has changed since she's been there. Whereas it used to be 3-4 minute fluff matches to fill the card out and just get the story across. Now they're expected to do 10 to 15 minutes every night they wrestle, which is really impressive to show that they have that much faith in the division and in her as champion.
Yeah. If Impact had been offering that when I first started to watch wrestling, I probably would have, like, picked it up and watched it every week.
Yeah.
You know?
I think they need more women to fill out the division. They've got some good people, and their underneath talent are very, very good, potentially very good, like Amber Nova and Kiera Hogan and people like that.
Oh, yeah.
And Spinelli and those other people that they've got. They're very, very good wrestlers, and they could do an awful lot more with them than they do. But having said that, budget's a budget, and they've got a bunch of male talent they have to look after first, and I understand that. I'd like to see more. When they get some gaps, I hope they fill it up with women.
Yeah, and I mean, I really enjoyed how they presented this match like it was important. I think they did a good job of presenting Ali as a babyface champion, you know? She even wore, like, sparkly pink gear, which is very, like, Barbie, but also very much, like, in keeping with her aesthetic. And I thought they did a great job presenting Sue. Like, they really let her do her thing and do all the things she does on small independent shows that make her a creepy, cool character. I thought the wrestling in this match was awesome. Like, those two are both really, really good. They know what they're doing. They know how to get the crowd excited about it. And the crowd was so into this match. They were really loud during this match, which was awesome. I was really, really excited to see that, because so often in Impact, even when the ladies were doing a great job, I've watched knockouts matches. You know, I watched a knockouts match one time where I think Mia Yim did, like, a front flip off the top rope into a drop kick, and it was just incredible, and the audience barely reacted to it at all.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just really nice to see the crowd invested in the division and to see the ladies delivering, you know, because they can. We all know that they can.
Yeah.
I am perplexed at how many amazingly talented female wrestlers Impact seems to have burned through, where they may not be able to get those relationships back because they didn't treat them well when they were there. I don't know, you were talking about how they need to do more with their women's division, and that was the first thing I thought of when you said that, is that there are a lot of really amazing female wrestlers who've worked for them over the years who probably won't come back if they're invited.
No.
Because they were treated so badly before.
And they're also not going to get a pathway to other markets like they used to as well either, just because their product is different now, and there's nothing wrong with that, and I like the direction they're going in, but you're not going to get, like... You're not going to get the same deal that Ring of Honor has with Stardom to swap talent, because it's
right.
not presented in the right way for Stardom or anyone else to take that seriously. European women are going to earn far more not going to the US, and they would hold themselves up from deals with WWE if they went to Impact Wrestling for any length of time. You know, and there's so many horror stories of British wrestlers not getting deals with Impact the way that they need them to, and visa issues and one thing and another. You know, the old school Mark Haskins story, when he signed with Impact Wrestling and essentially sat home for 9 months on no pay because he wasn't being used on TV, and his contract said he couldn't wrestle for anyone else in a market where Impact was shown, so he couldn't wrestle in Britain.
So, that's terrible.
Yeah, it was a horrific story, but, you know, that reputation holds true with pros. I mean, you've got success stories, even minor success stories like Grado, who had a perfectly serviceable and productive run in Impact Wrestling and did himself no end of favors as far as British market stuff is concerned. But equally, for every one of those, it's been a horror story for Brits as well.
Yeah. I think if they did something cooperative with Shimmer or Shine, it could be really good, because while they're not promotions where they have a TV presence, they're promotions where they have a streaming presence on WWN. Shimmer, I don't think, streams their shows live.
No.
Maybe they do at this point, but Shine does. I know they do because they did when I was there for one of them. But I think in order for them to do that and get something cooperative going, they would have to do more with their women's division for those promotions to think it would be worth it.
Oh, they are working with Shine now.
Oh, they are officially?
Yeah.
Okay, that's great.
Gail Kim's been doing workshops with them, and she's been doing some production work for them as well, from what I understand.
I mean, anything Gail Kim wants to invest her time into, I'm going to assume will be a success, so ooh, that's great.
Well, when I talked to her last year for Impact Wrestling, and one of the things, not Impact Wrestling, I talked to her last year for Total Wrestling, and one of the things she said when she retired, one of the things she wanted to do was focus on trying to make the Knockouts division better than it is and build it up, because she's the producer for the Knockouts division. And she's been, you know, when she's producing, she's saying, don't do the same old things. Come up with something new. Be creative. Don't do roll up finish. Do something different, which is what really is, you know, the exact opposite of what previous road agents have been saying, because of the amount of roll up finishes in women's Impact Wrestling matches over the last 5 years has been ridiculous. But, you know, there is a stark difference because Gail Kim knows how to showcase people better than the other road agents they've had. So, in this particular case.
I mean, like, the whole division, any woman who's ever worked for Impact, or really any woman who's ever worked with Gail Kim, talks about her with such reverence and such respect. I mean, you know, she's got that big sister relationship with a lot of those girls where she can give them advice and they'll take it to heart because they trust her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that probably has to really help versus a random nondescript male boss who probably isn't even a wrestler telling them what to do.
Well, I mean, like the road agents recently, I guess Simon Diamond and Al Snow, who are perfectly good road agents. There's nothing wrong with what they do, and they train a lot of women as well. But I can see why, you know, they've got to worry about the whole show, not specific things. I mean, I think there was things were pretty good when D'Lo Brown was the road agent there as well. You know, he developed things greatly. So the main event ended up being a three-way title match. Pentagon Jr. defeats Austin Aries and Phoenix for the Impact Wrestling World Championship. A very interesting match. The rematch from the WrestleCon show, Lucha versus Impact Wrestling. A quick shot change to replace the match that involved Alberto El Patron as he was fired. Which made
finally
a lot of us very happy. Apparently,
Apparently
you have to turn up drunk to get fired at Impact Wrestling. That's what it takes. So, and this was a very, 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 very good match. I really enjoyed this a lot, and it was nice to see an interesting change, and nice to see two guys who are making their Impact Wrestling debut in the main event at the Orlando stage there at Universal Studios, doing a fantastic job and getting over instantly. That was amazing. What did you think of this match, Chelsea?
I liked this so much that I told at least 5 people who don't normally watch Impact to watch it, and at least 2 of them did, and they really liked it. That is not surprising, because Phoenix and Pentagon Jr. are both incredible, and everything they touch turns to gold. I don't like Austin Aries. I don't like him as a person, I don't really like him as a wrestler, but he was good in this match. He did everything he was supposed to do. But really, this match for me was all about Phoenix. I think it was for the crowd too. They got huge reactions. I thought this was really fun. This was really, really enjoyable. It did not suffer from the thing that a lot of Impact main events have suffered from on previous pay-per-views I've watched, where it did not feel overproduced. It felt like, you know, those guys were allowed to work out stuff that plays to their strengths. So all of them had an opportunity to show what they could do. I was really surprised by this one. And also, I am utterly thrilled that Pentagon Jr. is the Impact Champion. I was not expecting it to be as good as it was. I don't know why. I mean, I know those guys can deliver, but I was really, really shocked. This to me made me think about the fact that Impact, for such a long time, has tried to stand on their own as a product. Like, in this almost obstinate, we can be as good as WWE kind of way, where they make people change their names, and they, you know, try to do this branding of, like, this is a specifically Impact thing for things that are not Impact things. And the cooperative stuff they've been doing with Lucha Underground shows me that they do much better just kind of being okay with the position that they're in, where they're not WWE, and they also don't need to be. So they can offer you a product that is acknowledging of other wrestling companies and acknowledging that the wrestling stars they're booking are stars in other places, and it works. And a lot of the best wrestling that's out there in the independent scene works really well because of cooperative relationships between other companies. And I think that Impact is smart to change tack there. I think it's working really well.
Yeah, be a conduit for good wrestling. You don't have to be a wrestling company at all, in that sense. Yeah, you know, that's really where what they're doing. And I think that works really, really well for them. More than anything else that they've done, it is just like... the guys on the Total Wrestling podcast last week when they were previewing this show, they said it's like... It's not like an Impact show anymore. It's like a big WrestleCon show where you get these big names in wrestling. And I'm thinking, but that's what wrestling used to be. You look back at like the first Starrcade show, and it's not just guys from North Carolina. It's Carlos Colon and Abdullah the Butcher, because they've got a hot feud, so we know it'll make money. Bring them in. You know, put people on the card that will draw attention to you. Have the varied things, because not everyone's going to get into, like me and you don't like Sammy Callahan. You didn't even watch the match and I gritted my teeth all the way through it. But some people like him. I know they do, because I've argued with them all the time online. But, you know, so do something with the things you've got. What have you got and what can you get the best out of it? Rather than trying to shoehorn stuff into getting things the way you want them, go with the flow.
Right.
But yeah,
it works much better, especially, like, look at the talent they've been able to attract since they changed that tack. I mean, is there a bigger star to people who watch Lucha Underground than Pentagon Jr.? That guy is, like, universally beloved because he's f***ing awesome.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. I mean, he's amazing, and he should be universally loved. He's a brilliant, brilliant wrestler. So is Phoenix. He's an awesome wrestler, and I was so glad to hear him such a showcase. And, you know, I know you don't like Austin Aries. I do. But it was some of the best work I've seen him do because he was having to think for a change. And I don't even like three-way matches, but I enjoyed this one because there were three guys who knew what they're doing and knew to get the best out of the situation. And that's really what's happening. I think Impact, it's never going to be Ring of Honor in, with that Super Dream Card feel and that old-school feel. And they have a very strict identity and they... Within the bounds of reason, they stick to that identity, and that's what's helped them become the company they are. Impact's never really found its identity, and now they're starting to find one that's much more pliable and suits the situation a lot better. And, you know, because of the situation they're in, they can only do tapings every 2 months. You don't know who you're going to get, so you've got to tell stories that are going to last for 8 weeks, and you've got to be pliable with that.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's like that tip that everybody gives you about going on a date. Just be yourself.
Yeah.
Like, being yourself is always going to get you further than the person you try to pretend to be because you wish you were that person. Impact, for such a long time, has been trying so hard to pretend that they're WWE when there's just no contest whatsoever.
Yeah, so, you know, look at the other companies around the world. New Japan don't copy WWE. AAA don't copy WWE. CMLL don't copy WWE. Progress don't. You know, all of these companies have their own identities and a history that they are built on. Even CZW doesn't follow WWE. They do something that they knew was going to appeal to a niche market. It still does. But that company's still around. You know, 15, 20 years later, they've still made a load of money and sold a shitload of DVDs. So, find your space and grow in that space.
Yeah. I hope that that Impact continues to do that. You know, when I got to the end of this pay-per-view, I thought, maybe I'll start watching Impact now from time to time just to see what it's doing. And I haven't felt that way literally the entire time I've been a wrestling fan because for so long it's just been so bad.
This is the thing. Gavin Duenas and me used to joke about this from the old squash a lot of the time. Like, listening to fans chant, "This is awesome," isn't necessarily the best thing you want, because you want them umming and ahhing at the story being told, not at the big moves. And I used to joke about Impact Wrestling fans should chant, "This is adequate." And I've kind of rethought about that, and it's like, they should chant. Adequate is all they want at the moment. We'll do awesome later, but let's get adequate sorted, and they've managed it.
Yeah, this smelled very capable. Smelled like three dead hands.
Yes, and that's, I think, you know, Don Callis, Scott D'Amore, Sanjay Dutt. Thumbs up for your booking expertise, sirs.
I love Sanjay. I'm happy in this position.
Me too. I mean, I like Don Callis as well. I know I rag on his commentary, but as a guy, he seems like a cool guy, and he seems like a guy who knows what he's doing within a wrestling company and how to get the best out of it. And I think he's the right guy for the job.
He seems like a good dude. I think the thing I hold against him is still the commentary he does in New Japan whenever he's talking about any of the female performers who they use, but other than that, he seems like a good dude.
And to be fair to him, he has calmed down on that a lot. He's...
Yeah.
You know, because he got so much shit.
He got roasted on Twitter like 7 times.
After a while, he learned, oh, that's not what we do here. Yes. Okay. Well, that covers, wraps up our coverage of Redemption from Impact Wrestling. I'd like to thank my guest today, Miss Chelsea Spollen of ShouldersUp.net. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thanks for having me.
And I would like to thank you for listening. You can find me at Sheriff Lone Star. You can find Chelsea at Chelsea Comics on Twitter, though she mainly tweets about wrestling at ShouldersUp or Shoulders_Up. You can find the show at Troopany Show on Twitter and The Troopany Show on Facebook. You can find us on Patreon as well. And please do pledge and help keep the Troopany Show free forever for everyone. Thank you very much for your time today. We'll be back next week. So speak to you soon. Take care and have a good week.